mirror all around him. He had ripped the shower curtain from the ceiling and the towel rack from the wall. He didn't look up at me when I came in, or even when I walked carefully across the fragments of glass to reach him. I knelt among the shards and reached over his shoulder to turn the shower on. I waited until the water warmed up, then tugged him by his arm toward the spray. I stood in the shower with him, fully clothed. His breaths came in sharp bursts against my cheek. I put my hand on the back of his neck and pulled his face toward the water. He closed his eyes and let it hit his cheeks. His trembling fingers sought mine, and he clutched my hand against his chest, against his armor. We stood there together for a long time, until his tears subsided. Then I turned the water off and led him into the kitchen, scattering mirror pieces with my toes as I walked. He was staring into middle distance. I wasn't sure that he knew where he was or what was happening to him. I undid the straps of his armor and guided it over his head. I pinched the hem of his shirt and peeled the wet fabric away from his body. I unbuttoned his pants and let them drop to the floor in a soaking wet heap. I had daydreamed about seeing him this way, and even about one day undressing him, taking away some of the layers that separated us. But this was not a daydream. He was in pain. I wanted to help him. I wasn't aware of my own pain, but as I helped him dry off, I saw the current shadows moving, faster than they had in a long time. It was like someone had injected them into my veins, so they traveled alongside my blood. Dr. Fodlin had said that my current gift was stronger when I was emotional. Well, he was right. I didn't care about Suzhou. In fact, I was planning to spit on his funeral pyre just to hear it sizzle. But I cared about Akos, more than anyone. By then he had returned to his body, and he was responsive enough to help me bandage his arm and to walk into his bedroom on his own. I made sure he was under the covers, then put a pot on one of the burners at the apothecary counter. He had made a potion to keep me from having dreams once. Now, it was my turn.
Chapter 23. Akos. Everything was sliding away from Akos. Silk on silk, oil beading on water. Losing time, sometimes. A few ticks passing in an hour in the shower. He got out with pruny fingers and bright skin, or a night of sleep lasting all the way until the next afternoon. Losing space other times, and he was standing in the challenge arena, streaked with another man's blood. Or he was in the feather grass, stumbling over the skeletons of those who had gotten lost there. Losing hushflower petals to the inside of his cheek, so he could stay calm. Or the steadiness of his hands when they wouldn't stop shaking, or words on the way to his mouth. Syra let him go on that way for a few days, but the day before they were supposed to land in Voa again, when he had skipped a few meals in a row, she came into his room and said, "Get up, now." He just looked at her, confused, like she was speaking a language he didn't know. She rolled her eyes, grabbed his arm, and pulled. Her touch stung. He winced. "Shit," she said, letting go. "See what's happening? You're starting to feel my current gift. Because you're so weak, your current gift is faltering. That's why you need to get up and eat something. So you can have your servant back, is that it?" He snapped, losing patience too. "Well, I'm done. I'm ready to die for your family, whatever that means." She bent over so their faces were on the same level and said, "I know what it is to become something you hate. I know how it hurts. But life is full of hurt." Shadows pooled in her eye sockets like they were proving her point. "And your capacity for bearing it is much greater than you believe." Her eyes held his for a few seconds, And then he said, "What kind of rousing speech is that? Life is full of hurt?" "The last time I checked, your brother is still here," she said. "So you should keep yourself alive to get him out, if nothing else." "Aija," he snorted. "Like that's what this is about." He hadn't been thinking about Aija when he took Suzao's life. He'd been thinking about how badly he wanted Suzao dead. "Then what is it about, exactly?" She folded her arms. "How should I know?" He threw out his arms, emphatic, and smacked his hand against the wall. He ignored the ache in his knuckles. "You're the one who made me this way. Why don't you tell me? Honor has no place in survival, remember?" Whatever spark there had been behind her eyes fizzled at the recollection. He was about to try to snatch the words back when a knock came at the door. He watched her open it from the edge of his bed. The guard with the most boring job imaginable was standing there with Jorak behind him. Akos leaned his face into his hand. "Don't let him in." "I think you're forgetting whose quarters these actually are," Cyrus said, sharp, and she stepped back so Jorak could come in. "Damn it, Cyrus!" He came to his feet. His vision went black for a few ticks, and he stumbled into the doorframe. Maybe she was right. He did need to eat something. Jorak's eyes widened at the sight of him. "Good luck," Cyrus said to him, and she shut herself in the bathroom. Jorak looked anywhere else. At the wall decorated with armor, and the plants dangling from the ceiling, and the bright pots and pans stacked on the rickety stove. He scratched his neck, leaving pink lines on his skin, his nervous habit. Akos moved toward him, every part of his body heavy. He was breathless by the time he got to a chair and sat. "What are you doing here?" he said, feeling savage. He wanted to dig in his nails, refused to let anything else slide away, even if it meant hurting Jorak, who had already seen more than his fair share of hurt. "You got what you wanted, didn't you?" "Yes, I did," Jorak said, quiet. He sat down next to Akos. "I came to thank you." "This wasn't a favor, it was a transaction. I kill Suzao, you get Aija out." "Which will be easier to do when we land in Voa," Jorak said, still in that horrible quiet voice, like he was trying to soothe an animal. Maybe, Akos thought, that was exactly what he was trying to do. "Listen, I..." He furrowed his brows. "I didn't really know what I was asking you to do. I thought it would be easy for you. You seemed like the sort of person it would be easy for." "I don't want to talk about this." Akos cradled his head in his hands. He couldn't stand to think of how easy it had been. Suzao hadn't had a chance, hadn't known what he was walking into. Akos felt more like a murderer now than he had after his first kill. At least that, Kalmev's death, had been wild and mad, almost a dream. Not like this. Jorak set a hand on his shoulder. Akos tried to shrug him off, but he wouldn't be shrugged, not until Akos looked at him. "My mother sent me with this," Jorak said. He drew a long chain from his pocket with a ring dangling from it. It was made of bright metal, orange, pink in color, and stamped with a symbol. "This ring bears the seal of her family. She wanted you to have it." Akos ran shaking fingers over the links of the chain, delicate but doubled over for strength. He gathered the ring into his fist, so the symbol of Jorak's mother's family would imprint on his palm. "Your mother," he said. "Thanks me?" His voice broke. He let his head rest on the table. No tears came. "My family is safe now," Jorak said. "Come and see us sometime, if you can. We live on the edge of Voa, between the divide and the training camp. Little village right off the road. You'll be welcome among us for what you've done." Akos felt heat on the back of his head. Jorek's hand pressing gently. It was more comforting than he would have thought. Oh, and don't forget to put my father's mark on your arm. Please. The door closed. Akos wrapped his arms around his head, the ring still in his fist. His knuckles were split from the fight. He felt the scabs tug when he bent his fingers. The bathroom door squealed as Syra opened it. She rustled around in the kitchen for a little while, then set a hunk of bread in front of him. He ate it so fast he almost choked on it, then dropped his left arm and turned it so the kill marks faced her. "Carve the mark," he said. He was so hoarse the words almost didn't come out. "It can wait." Syra ran her hand over his short hair. He shivered at the light touch. Her current gift wasn't hurting him anymore. Maybe Jorek had given him some relief after all. Or it was just the bread. "Please," he lifted his head. "Just do it now." Syra reached for her knife, and Akos watched her arm muscles contract. She was solid muscle, Syra Noavec, with not much to spare. But inside, growing softer all the time, a fist learning to unclench. She picked up his wrist. His fingers rested on her skin, dimming the shadows that flowed through her. It was easier without them to see that she was beautiful, her hair in long, loose curls, shining in the shifting light, her eyes so dark they looked black, her aquiline nose, with its fine bones, and the splotch next to her windpipe, a birthmark, its shape somehow elegant. She placed the tip of the knife against his arm, beside his second mark, with the hash through it. "Ready?" she said. "One. Two." On two, she dug in, merciless, with the tip of the blade. Then she found the little bottle in the drawer with its brush. He watched her touch the dark liquid to his fresh wound with all the finesse of a painter at an easel. Sharp pain went down his arm. A rush of energy followed it. Adrenaline, pushing out the aching, throbbing mess of the rest of him. She whispered the name across his skin. Suzao Kuzar. And he felt it. Felt the loss and the weight and the permanence, just as he was supposed to. He allowed himself to find relief in the Shotet ritual. "I'm sorry," he said, not sure what he was apologizing for. Being mean to her earlier, or everything that had happened since the challenge, or something else. He'd woken the day after the challenge to her sweeping up broken glass in the bathroom, and later to her screwing the towel rack back into the wall. He didn't remember ripping it off. Beyond that, he was startled to learn that she knew how to use tools, like a commoner. But that was Syra, stuff full of random knowledge. "I'm not so jaded I don't remember," she said, eyes shifting away from his. "That feeling, like everything is broken. Breaking." She placed a hand in his and lifted the other to touch his neck, lightly. He twitched at first, then relaxed. He still had a mark there where Suzao had choked him in the cafeteria. Then she was moving her fingers back toward his ear along the scar Rizek had cut into his neck, and he was leaning into her touch. He was warm. Too warm. They never touched like this. He never thought he wanted them to. "You make no sense to me," she said. Her palm was on his face. Then her fingers curled behind his ear. Long, thin fingers with tendons and veins always standing at attention. Knuckles so dry the skin was peeling in places. "All that has happened to you would make another person hard and hopeless," she said. "So how? How are you even possible?" He closed his eyes, aching. "Still, Akos, this is a war." She brought her forehead to his. Her fingers were firm, fitted to his bones. A war between you and the people who destroyed your life. Don't be ashamed of fighting it. And then a different kind of ache. A pang of longing deep in his gut. He wanted her. Wanted to run his fingers along her strict cheekbone. Wanted to taste the elegant birthmark on her throat and to feel her breaths against his mouth and to wind her hair around his fingers until they were trapped. He turned his head and pressed his lips to her cheek, hard enough that it wasn't quite a kiss. They shared a breath. Then he pulled back, stood up, turned away, wiped his mouth, wondered what the hell was wrong with him. She stood right behind him, so he could feel her body's warmth at his back. She touched the space between his shoulders. Was it her current gift that made his skin prickle at the contact, even through his shirt? "There's something I have to do," she said. "I'll be back soon." Just like that, she was gone.
Chapter 24. Syra. I walked the maintenance tunnels, my face pulsing. The memory of his lips against my cheek played over and over in my mind. I tried to stomp it down like a stray ember. I couldn't kindle it and still do what needed to be done. The path to Tekka's narrow closet of a room was complicated and led me deep into the belly of the ship. She answered my light knock in seconds. She wore loose clothing, and her feet were bare. She had tied a length of cloth over her missing eye instead of covering it with an eye patch. Over her shoulder, I saw her lofted bed with the makeshift desk under it, now clear of all screws and tools and wires, ready for her to move back to Voa. "What the hell?" she said, and she dragged me into the room. Her eye was wide with alarm. "You can't just come here without warning. Are you crazy?" "Tomorrow," I said. "Whatever you're going to do to my brother, you should do it tomorrow." "Tomorrow," she repeated. "As in, the day after today." "Last time I checked, that was the official definition of tomorrow, yes," I said. She sat on the rickety stool by her desk and set her elbows on her knees. I saw a flash of skin as her shirt fell forward. She wasn't wearing a chest binder. It was strange to see her comfortable and in her own space. We didn't know each other well enough to see each other this way. "Why?" she said. "Everything is disorganized the day we land," I said. "The security system in the house will be vulnerable. Everyone will be exhausted. It's the perfect time to slip in." Tekka frowned.
"Do you have a plan?"
"Back gate, back door, hidden tunnels. Those are all easy enough to get through, because I know the codes," I said. "It's only when we get to his personal rooms that the sensors require my blood. If you can get to the back gate at midnight, I can help with the rest."
"And you're sure you're ready for this?"
A picture of Zosita was taped to the wall above Tekka's head, right over her pillow. Another picture was beside it. A boy who looked like her brother. My throat felt tight. In one way or another, my family was responsible for every loss she had suffered. "What kind of a stupid question is that?" I said, scowling at her. "Of course I'm ready. But are you ready for your part of our agreement?"
"Karaseth?"
"Yeah," she said.
"You get us in, we'll get him out."
"I want it done simultaneously. I don't want to risk him getting hurt because of what I'm doing," I said. "He's hushflower resistant, so it will require quite a bit to knock him out. And he's a skilled fighter, so don't underestimate him." Tekka nodded, slowly, and stared, chewing the inside of her cheek.
"What happened? You look all frantic or something," she said. "You guys have a fight?"
I didn't answer.
"I don't get it," she said. "You're obviously in love with him. Why do you want him gone?"
I considered not answering that either. The feeling of his rough chin scratching my cheek and his mouth warm against my skin haunted me still. He had kissed me. Without prompting. Without cunning. I should have been happy. Hopeful. But it wasn't that easy, was it? I had dozens of reasons to give her. Akos was in danger, now that Rizek had realized he could use him as leverage over me. Aija was lost, and maybe Akos would be able to accept that once he was home, with his mother and sister. Akos and I would never be equals, as long as he was Rizek's prisoner here, so I had to make sure he was freed. But the one closest to my heart was the reason that came tumbling out. Being here, it's breaking him, I said. I shifted my weight from one foot to the other, uncomfortable. I can't watch anymore. I won't.
Yeah.
Her voice was soft.
Win or lose, you get us in, we'll get him out. Okay?
Okay, I said. Thank you. I had always hated going back home. Many of the Chotet went to the observation deck to cheer as our white planet came back into view. The energy on the ship was frantic and joyful as everyone packed their belongings and prepared to reunite with the young and old who had to stay behind. But I was mournful and nervous. I didn't pack very much. Some clothes, some weapons. I threw out the perishable food and stripped my bed of its sheets and blankets. Akos helped in silence, his arm still wrapped in a bandage. His bag of possessions was already on the table. I had watched him pack some clothes and some of the books I had given him, his favorite pages folded over. Though I had already read all those books, I wanted to open them again just to search out the parts he most treasured. I wanted to read them as if immersed in his mind. "You're acting weird," he said once we were finished, and all there was left to do was wait. "I don't like going home," I said. It was true, at least. Akos looked around and shrugged. "Seems like this is your home. There's more of you in here than anywhere in Voa." He was right, of course. I was happy that he knew what more of me really was, that he might know as much about me, from observation, as I knew about him. And I did know him. I could pick him out in a crowd from his gait alone. I knew the shade of his veins that showed on the backs of his hands, and his favorite knife for chopping ice flowers, and the way his breath always smelled spiced, like hush flower and sendess leaf mixed together.
"Maybe next time I'll do more to my room," he said.
"You won't be back next time," I thought. "Yeah," I forced a smile. "You should." My mother had told me, once, that I had a gift for pretending. My father had not liked to see pain, so I had hidden mine from him as a child, my face passive, even as my fingernails bit my palm. And every time she took me to a specialist or a doctor about my current gift, the lies about where we had gone came to me as easily as the truth. Pretending, in the Noavec family, was survival. I used that gift as I went through the motions of landing and returning home, going to the loading bay after we re-entered the atmosphere, piling into a transport floater, making the public walk back to Noavec Manor in Rizek's wake. That evening I ate dinner with my brother and Ima Zetsivis, pretending not to see her hand on his knee, fingers tapping, or the frantic look in her eyes whenever he didn't laugh at one of her jokes. Later, she seemed to relax, and they left all pretense behind them, curled together on one side of the table, elbows bumping as they cut their food. I had killed her family, and now she was my brother's lover. I would have been disgusted by it had I not understood so well what it was like to want to live. To need it, no matter the cost. I still understood it, but now I needed something else more. For Akos to be safe. Afterward, I pretended to be patient as Akos taught me how to predict how strong a poison would be without tasting it. I tried to seal every moment in my memory. I needed to know how to brew these concoctions on my own, because soon he would be gone. If the renegades and I were caught in our attempt tonight, I would probably lose my life. If we succeeded, Akos would be home, and Xotet would be in chaos without its leader. Either way, it was unlikely that I would see him again.
"No, no," Akos said. "Don't hack at it. Slice. Slice."
"I am slicing," I said. "Maybe if your knives weren't so dull..."
"Dull? I could cut your fingertip off with this knife."
I spun the knife in my hand and caught it by the handle.
"Oh? Could you?"
He laughed and put his arm across my shoulders. I felt my heartbeat in my throat.
"Don't pretend you're not capable of delicacy. I've seen it myself."
I scowled and tried to focus on slicing. My hands were trembling a little.
"See me dancing in the training room, and you think you know everything about me."
"I know enough. Look, slices. Told you so." He lifted his arm, but kept his hand against my back, right under my shoulder blade. I carried the feeling with me for the rest of the night, as we finished the elixir and got ready for bed, and he shut the door between us. I closed my eyes as I locked him in, went down the hallway to my bathroom, and poured my sleeping potion into the sink. I changed into the same clothes I wore for training, loose and flexible, and shoes that would be silent on the floorboards. I braided my hair tightly so it wouldn't get in my way, then pinned it under so no one could grab and pull it in a fight. I strapped the knife to the small of my back, sideways, so I could grab the handle easily. I likely wouldn't use it. I preferred my bare hands in a crisis. Then I slipped behind the wall panel in my room and crept through the passages toward the back door. I knew the way by heart, but I felt for the notches at every corner anyway, to make sure I was in the right place. I paused by the circle carved into the wall near the kitchens, the sign of the secret exit. I was really doing it, helping a group of renegades murder my brother. Rizek had lived his life in a daze of cruelty, obeying the instructions of our long-dead father like the man was standing over him, and relishing none of it. Men like Rizek Novavek were not born. They were made. But time could not move backward. Just as he had been made, he had to be unmade. I pushed through the hidden door and walked straight through the feathergrass stalks to the gate. I saw pale faces in the grass, Letty's, Uzul's, my mother's, beckoning me toward them. They whispered my name, and it sounded like the shuffle of the grass in the wind. Shivering, I typed my mother's birthday into the box by the gate, and the door sprang open. Waiting a few feet away, in the dark, were Tekka, Tos, and Jorek, faces covered. I jerked my head to the side, and they filed past me, into the feather grass. I closed the gate behind them, then overtook Tekka to show them the back door. It seemed to me, as I led them down the passageways to my brother's wing, that such a monumental thing shouldn't take place in complete silence. But maybe the reverent quiet was an acknowledgement of what we were doing. I touched the corners, feeling for the deep grooves that suggested upcoming staircases. I traveled by memory, sidestepping protruding nails and cracked floorboards. At the place where the passageways split, the left leading to my part of the house and the right leading to Rizek's, I turned to Tos. "Go left, third door," I said. I handed him the key to Akos's room. "This will unlock the door. You may have to be a little forceful with him before you drug him."
"I'm not worried," Tos said.
I wasn't either. Tos was big as a boulder, no matter how skilled Akos had become at defending himself. I watched as Tos clasped hands with Tekka and Jorek in turn, and disappeared down the left passage. When we drew closer to Rizek's part of the house, I moved more slowly, remembering what Rizek had said to Akos about the advanced security near his rooms. Tekka touched my shoulder and slipped past me. She crouched and pressed her palms flat to the floor. Her eyes closed. She took deep breaths through her nose. Then she stood, nodding.
"Nothing in this hallway," she said softly.
We walked that way for a little while, stopping at each corner or turn so that Tekka could use her current gift to sense the security system. Rizek would never have anticipated that a girl who lived slathered in grease and crowded by wires could bring about his undoing. Then the passageway came to an abrupt halt, boarded up. Of course, Rizek had probably ordered the little hallways closed after Akos nearly escaped. My stomach lurched, but I didn't panic. I slid the wall panel back and stepped into the empty sitting room beyond it. We were only a few rooms away from Rizek's bedroom and office. Between us and him, there were at least three guards and the lock that only my Noavec blood could open. We wouldn't be able to get past the guards without causing a disruption that would draw the others to us. I tapped Tekka's shoulder and leaned in to whisper in her ear, "How long do you need?" She held up two fingers. I nodded and drew my knife. I held it near my leg, my muscles twitching in anticipation of sharp movement. We walked out of the sitting room, and the first guard was there, pacing the hallway. I walked in his footsteps for a few seconds, matching my gait to his. Then I clapped my left hand over his mouth and stabbed with my right, sliding the blade under his armor and driving it between his ribs. He screamed into my hand, which was only good enough to muffle, not to silence. I let him fall and sprinted toward Rizek's quarters. The others followed me, no longer bothering to be quiet. I heard shouts up ahead. Jorek ran past me and barreled into another guard, knocking him off his feet with sheer force alone. I took the next one, seizing him by the throat, current shadows pooled in my palm, and hurling him into the wall to my left. Then I stumbled to a stop in front of Rizek's door, sweat curling around the back of my ear. The blood sensor was a slot in the wall, just wide enough and high enough to accommodate a hand. I guided my hand toward it, Tekka breathing heavily over my shoulder. All around us was shouting and running, but no one had reached us yet. I felt a pinch as the sensor drew my blood, and I waited for Rizek's door to spring open. It didn't. I withdrew my hand and tried again with my left. The door still didn't open. "You can't open it," I said to her, "with your gift?"
"If I could, we wouldn't have needed you," she cried. "I can turn it on and off, not unlock it. It's not working. Let's go."
I grabbed Tekka's arm, too frantic to care about the pain my touch caused, and dragged her down the hallway. She screamed, "Run!" And Jorek bashed the guard he was fighting with the handle of his current blade. He sliced another guard's armor, then chased us into the sitting room. We ran through the passages again.
"They're in the walls,"
I heard. Lights burned through the cracks in every secret door and panel. The whole house was awake. My lungs burned from the effort of sprinting. I heard scraping behind us as one of the panels opened.
"Tekka, go find Tos and Akos," I said. "Turn left, then right, go down the stairs, turn right again. The code for the back door is 0503. Say it back to me."
"Left, right, down, right, 0503,
Tekka repeated.
"Syra, go!"
I screamed, shoving her back. "I get you in, you get him out, remember? Well, you can't get him out if you're dead, so go!"
Slowly, Tekka nodded. I planted myself in the middle of the passage. I heard, rather than saw, Tekka and Jorek run away. Guards stormed into the narrow passage, and I let the pain build inside me until I could hardly see. My body was so flush with shadows that I was darkness manifest. I was a sliver of night, utterly empty. I screamed and threw myself at the first guard. The burst of pain hit him as my hand did, and he yelled, collapsing at my touch. Tears streamed down my face as I ran toward the next one, and the next one, and the next one. All I needed to do was buy the renegades some time, but it was too late for me. Chapter 25. Syra.
I see you've made some updates to the prison, I said to Rizek. My mother and father had taken me here, to the row of cells beneath the amphitheater, when I was young. It wasn't the official Voa prison, but a special, hidden compound in the city's center, made only for enemies of the Noavec family. It had been stone and metal, like something out of a history textbook, the last time I saw it. Now the floors were dark, made of a material like glass, but harder. There was no furniture in my cell except for a metal bench and a toilet and sink, hidden behind a screen. The wall that separated me from my brother was made of thick glass, with a slot for food, now open so we could hear each other speak. I was on the bench now, wedged in the corner with my legs sprawled in front of me. I was heavy with exhaustion and dark with pain, bruised from where Voss had grabbed me in the hidden hallways to stop me from hurting more of his guards. A lump on the back of my head, from where he had slammed me into the wall to knock me out, throbbed.
"When did you turn traitor?" Rizek was in the hallway, dressed in his armor. The pale overhead lights tinted his skin blue. He put his arm against the glass that separated us and leaned in.
It was an interesting question. I didn't feel like I had turned, so much as finally moved in the direction I had already been facing. I stood, and my head pounded, but it was nothing compared to the pain of the current shadows, which had gone haywire, moving so fast I couldn't keep track of them. Rizek's eyes followed them over my arms and legs and face like they were all he could see. They were all he had ever been able to see.
"You know, you never actually had my loyalty to begin with," I said, walking toward the glass. We were just feet apart, but I felt untouchable for the moment. Finally, I could say whatever I wanted to him.
"But I probably wouldn't have acted against you if you had just left us alone, like I told you to. When you went after Akos just to control me, though, well, it was more than I could accept."
"You are a fool."
"I'm not nearly as foolish as you believe."
"Yes, you certainly proved that," he laughed, gesturing wide to the prison all around us. "This is clearly the result of your brilliant mind."
He leaned into the barrier again and hunched so he was closer to my face, his breath fogging the glass.
"Did you know," Rizek said, "that your beloved Karaseth knows the Thuvazit Chancellor?"
I felt a pang of fear.
"I did know. Akos had told me about Orieva Benazit when we watched the footage of the Chancellor declaring herself."
Rizek didn't know that, of course, but he also wouldn't have brought it up to begin with if Akos had made it out of Noavec Manor with the renegades. So what had happened to him? Where was he now?
"No," I said, my throat dry. "Yes, it's very inconvenient that the Benazit sisters are twins. It means I don't know which one to strike at first, and Aija's visions have made it very clear that I must kill them in a particular order for the most desirable outcome," Rizek said, smiling. "His visions have also made it clear that Akos knows the information I need to accomplish my goal."
"So you still haven't taken Aija's current gift," I said, hoping to stall him. I didn't know what there was to gain from stalling him, just that I wanted time, as much time as I could get before I had to face what had happened to Akos and the renegades.
"I will remedy that soon enough," Rizek said, smiling. "I have been proceeding with caution, a concept you have never quite understood."
Well, he had me there.
Why didn't my blood work in the gene lock? I said.
Rezek only continued to smile.
Then he said, I should have mentioned this earlier, but we caught one of your renegade friends, Tos. He told us, with some encouragement, that you were participating in an attempt on my life. He's dead now. I'm afraid I got a little carried away.
Rezek smiled still wider, but his eyes were a little unfocused, like he was on hushflower. As much as Rezek acted like he was callous, I knew what had really happened. He had killed Tos because he believed it was necessary, but he had not been able to stand it. He had taken hushflower to calm himself down afterward.
What? I said flatly, finding it difficult to breathe. Have you done with Akos?
You don't seem to have any regret, Rezek continued, as if I hadn't spoken.
Perhaps if you had begged for forgiveness, I would have been lenient with you. Or with him, if you chose. And yet, here we are.
He straightened as the door at the end of the cell block opened. Voss marched in first, his cheek bruised from where I had struck him with my elbow. Ijah came in next, hoisting a sagging man at his side. I recognized the hanging head, the long, lean body that tripped beside him. Ijah dropped Akos to the floor in the hallway, and he went down easily, spitting blood on the ground. I thought I saw a flicker of sympathy on Ija's face as he looked down at his brother, but a moment later, it was gone.
Rezek! I felt wild, desperate. Rezek, he didn't have anything to do with it. Please don't bring him into this. He didn't know. He didn't know anything.
Rezek laughed.
I know he doesn't know anything about the renegades, Syra. Haven't we been over this? It is what he knows about his chancellor that I am interested in.
Both of my hands pressed to the glass, I sank to my knees.
Rezek crouched in front of me. This, he said, is why you should avoid entanglements. I can use you to find out what he knows about the chancellor, and him to find out what you know about the renegades. Very neat, very simple, don't you think?
I backed up, body pulsing with my heartbeat, until my spine touched the far wall. I couldn't run. I couldn't escape. But I didn't have to make this easy for them.
Get her out, Rezek said, typing in the code so the cell door opened. Let's see if Karaseth is weak enough for this to work yet.
I pushed off the wall, throwing myself as hard as I could at Voss as soon as he entered the cell. I slammed my shoulder into his gut, knocking him flat. He had grabbed my shoulders, but my arms were still mobile enough for me to claw at his face, drawing blood from the skin just under his eye. Rezek stepped in, hitting me in the jaw, and I fell to the side, dizzy. Voss dragged me over to Akos, so we knelt across from each other, barely an arm's length of space between us.
I'm sorry, was all I could think to say to him. That he was here was my fault, after all. If I hadn't fallen in with the renegades... But it was too late for thoughts like that.
Everything inside me slowed as his eyes met mine, like I had stopped time. I looked him over carefully, like a caress. His tousled brown hair, the dusting of freckles on his nose, and his gray eyes, unguarded for the first time I could remember. I didn't see the bruises or the blood that marked him. I listened to his breaths. I had heard them in my ear just after I kissed him, every exhale bursting a little, like he didn't want to let it go.
I always thought my fate meant I would die a traitor to my country.
Akos' voice was rough, like he had worn away at it by screaming.
But you made it so I won't.
He gave me a small, wild smile. I knew then that Akos wouldn't give up information about his chancellor, no matter what happened. I had never realized how deeply he felt his fate,
Dying for the Noavec family had been a curse to him, as surely as falling to the Benazit family was to Rizek. But because I had sided against my brother, if Akos died for me now, it meant he had never betrayed his home. So maybe it was all right that I had cost us both our lives by helping the renegades. Maybe it still meant something. With that thought, it was very simple. We would be in pain, and then we would die. I settled into the inevitability of it.
Let me be clear about what I want to happen here.
Rizek crouched beside us, balancing his elbows on his knees. His shoes were polished. He had taken time to polish his shoes before torturing his sister? I swallowed a weird little laugh.
Both of you are going to suffer. If you give in first, Kara says, you will tell me what you know about the fated Chancellor of Thuva. And if you give in first, Syra, you will tell me what you know about the renegades and their connections to the exile colony.
Rizek glanced at Vas.
Go ahead.
I braced myself for a blow, but it didn't come. Instead, Vas grabbed my wrist and forced my hand toward Akos. At first I let it happen. Sure, my touch wouldn't affect him. But then I remembered. Rizek had said to see if Akos was weak enough. That meant they had been starving him for the days I had been in the prison. They had weakened his body and his gift. I strained against Voss's vice hand, but I wasn't strong enough. My knuckles brushed Akos's face. The shadows crept toward him, even as I silently begged them not to move. But I was not their master. I never had been. Akos moaned, his own brother holding him in place as he tried to flinch away.
Excellent. It worked, Rizek said, coming to his feet. The Chancellor of Thuva, Karaseth. Tell me about her.
I pulled my elbow back as hard as I could, twisting and thrashing in Voss's grip. The shadows grew richer and more numerous the more I struggled, like they were mocking me. Vas was strong, and there was nothing I could do to him now. He held me steady with one hand and pushed my palm forward with the other, so it lay flat against Akos's throat. I could imagine nothing more horrible than this. Rizek's scourge turned against Akos Karaseth. I felt the heat of him. The pain inside me was desperate to be shared. It moved into him, but instead of diminishing in my own body the way it usually did, it only multiplied in us both. My arm shook from the effort of trying to pull away. Akos screamed, and so did I. So did I. I was dark with the current, the center of a black hole, a shred of the starless fringe of the galaxy. Every inch of me burned, ached, begged for relief. Akos's voice and mine met like two clasped hands. I closed my eyes. In front of me was a wooden desk, marked with circles from water classes. A pile of notebooks was scattered across it, and all of them bore my name. Syra Noavec. Syra Noavec. Syra Noavec. I recognized this place. It was Dr. Fodlan's office.
The current flows through every one of us, and like liquid metal flowing into a mold, it takes a different shape in each of us, he was saying.
My mother sat at my right, her posture straight and her hands folded in her lap. My memory of her was detailed and perfect, down to the loose strand of hair behind her ear and the faint blemish on her chin, covered with makeup.
That your daughter's gift causes her to invite pain into herself and project pain into others suggests something about what's going on inside her, he said. A cursory assessment says that on some level, she feels she deserves it, and she feels others deserve it as well.
Instead of erupting the way she had at the time, my mother tilted her head. I could still see her pulse in her throat. She turned to me in the chair. She was more beautiful than I had dared to remember. Even the lines at the corners of her eyes were graceful, gentle. "What do you think, Syra?" she said. And as she spoke, she became a dancer of Agra, her eyes lined with chalk and her bones glowing so brightly beneath her skin I could see even the faint spaces at their joints. "Do you think this is how it works?" "I don't know," I replied in my adult voice. It was my adult body sitting in the chair, too, though I had only been here as a child. "All I know is that the pain wants to be shared."
"Does it?"
The dancer smiled a little.
"Even with Akos?"
"The pain isn't me. It doesn't discriminate," I said. "The pain is my curse."
"No, no," the dancer said, her dark eyes locked on mine.
But they weren't brown anymore, as they had been when I saw her perform in the dining room. They were gray and wary. Akos's eyes, familiar to me even in a dream. He had taken her place, perched at the edge of the seat as if ready to take flight, his long body dwarfing the chair.
"Every current gift carries a curse," he said. "But no gift is only a curse.
The gift part of it is that no one can hurt me," I said. But even as I said it, I knew it wasn't true. People could still hurt me. They didn't need to touch me to do it. They didn't even need to torture me to do it. As long as I cared about my life, as long as I cared about Akos's life, or the lives of renegades I barely knew, I was as vulnerable as everyone else was to hurt. I blinked at him as a different answer came to me.
"You told me I was more than a knife, more than a weapon," I said.
"Maybe you're right." He smiled that small, familiar smile that creased his cheek.
"The gift," I said, "is the strength the curse has given me."
The new answer was like a blooming hush flower, petals unfurling.
"I can bear it. I can bear pain. I can bear anything."
He reached for my cheek. He became the dancer, and my mother, and Ortega in turn. And then I was in the prison, arm outstretched, fingers on Akos's cheek, Vas's hand strong around my wrist, holding me fast. Akos's teeth were gritted, and the shadows that were usually confined beneath my skin were all around us, like smoke, so dark I couldn't see Rizek or Aija or the prison with its glass walls. Akos's eyes, full of tears, full of pain, found mine. Pushing the shadow toward him would have been easy. I had done it many times before, each time a mark on my left arm. All I had to do was let the connection form, let the pain pass between us like a breath, like a kiss. Let all of it flow out of me, bringing relief for us both in death. But he did not deserve it. This time, I broke the connection, like slamming a door between us. I pulled the pain back into myself, willing my body to grow darker and darker, like a bottle of ink. I shuddered with the force of that power, that agony. I didn't scream. I wasn't afraid. I knew I was strong enough to survive it all.
4. Chapter 26, Akos. In the place between sleeping and waking, he thought he saw feather grass, tilting in the wind. He imagined he was home and could taste snow on the air, smell cold earth. He let longing pierce him all the way through, and then fell asleep again. oil beading on water. He had been on his knees on the floor of the prison, watching current shadows pull away from Cyrus' skin like smoke. The haze tinted the hand on his shoulder, Iger's hand, dark gray. He saw Cyra through it only faintly, her chin tipped up, eyes closed like she was sleeping. And now, lying on a thin mattress, with a heater over his bare feet, a needle in his arm, his wrist cuffed to a bed frame. The pain and the memory of it slipping away into numbness. He twitched his fingers, and the IV needle shifted sharp under his skin. He frowned. This place was a dream. It had to be, because he was still in that tomb under Voa's amphitheater, and Rizek was ordering him to talk about Ori Rednalis, Orieva Benazit, whatever her name was now. Akos? The woman's voice sounded real enough. Maybe it wasn't a dream after all. She stood over him, stick-straight hair framing her face. He'd know those eyes anywhere. They'd stared at him across the dinner table, crinkled at the corners when Ija made a joke. Her left eyelid sometimes twitched when she got nervous. She was here, like thinking about her had brought her. His own name settled him into himself. No more slipping and sliding. Ori? He croaked. A tear dropped from her eye to the bedsheets. She put her hand on his, covering the tube from the IV needle. Her sleeve, made of thick black wool, was draped over her palm, and the garment pulled tight around her throat. Signs of Thuva, where a person would near strangle herself to death to keep any warmth from escaping. Cece's coming, Ori said. I called her, and she's on her way. I called your mother, too, but she's across the galaxy. It will take her some time. He was so tired. Don't go, he said as his eyes closed. I won't. Her voice was husky but reassuring. I won't go. He dreamt he was between the glass prison cells, his knees digging into the black floor, his guts rumbling with hunger. And he woke in the hospital, with Ori slumped over at his side, her arm sprawled across his legs. Through the window behind her he saw floaters whizzing past and big buildings hanging in the sky like ripe fruit. Where are we? He said. She blinked sleep from her eyes and said, Shissa Hospital. Shissa? Why? Because that's where you got dropped, she said. You don't remember? When she first spoke to him, she had sounded different, careful with every word. But the longer she talked, the more she lapsed into their lazy Hessa rhythms, every syllable sliding into the next one. He found himself doing the same thing. Dropped? By who? We don't know. Thought you would. He strained for the memory but couldn't quite reach it. Don't worry. She put her hand on his again. There was so much hush flower in your system you probably should have been dead. No one expects you to remember. She smiled. So familiar. Slanted mouth into curved cheek. They must not have known you that well. To dump you in Shissa like some kind of city-dwelling snot. He'd almost forgotten their jokes about this place. Shissa kids with their heads in the skies. Couldn't even recognize an ice flower on sight because they were used to seeing them from a long ways up. Couldn't even fasten a proper coat closed. Useless glass dwellers all. City-dwelling snot, says the fated Chancellor of Thuva, he said, suddenly remembering. Or is that your twin? Which one of you is the older one, anyway? I'm not the Chancellor, I'm the other one. Fated to raise her sister to the throne, or whatever, she said. But if I was her, you would definitely not be addressing me with the respect appropriate for my position. Snob, Akos said. Hessa trash. I am from the family Karaseth, you know. We're not exactly trash. Yes, I know, Her smile softened a little, like she was saying,